Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Bhakti Vai Bhava ki, Grantaraj Shrima Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Jayo Nitai Goprima.
So what did we discuss last week?
That's a good point. Any other points?
Point of service is to develop ruchi for Krishna. But equally, if one is involved only in service and does not hear Krishna Katha, the service becomes mechanical and the taste is lost.
Last point. Any other points?
One should hear regularly from the one of our souls for a long period of time. It's our purification process.
Any other thoughts?
One must give charity.
Yep. It is mentioned. Anything else?
To understand Gopi's love, first become selfless. Then only you can understand their love.
Yeah. Okay, nice little points there. So, as we were describing
last week,
the chapter which we just discussed was called
Understanding Material Nature,
which is chapter
27.
So understanding material nature, in the beginning of the chapter, it was described, what was chapter 26 called?
Fundamental principles.
And then chapter 25 was?
Glories
of devotional service. So, from the glories of devotional service, Bildad first emphasized the necessity of performing devotional service as the most efficient way to transcend the material energy. Then, in chapter 26, the fundamental principles of devotional service, he began to describe the material creation, the elements which one has to extricate oneself from in order to become fully realized. Then, in the beginning of chapter 27, which was called?
Understanding Material Nature.
In the beginning, then he gave basic principles which one must follow if one wants to extricate oneself from the material energy. Philosophy is not sufficient. We must also have practices or principles in order to realize the philosophy. So therefore, he gave different principles which we must follow, such as practicing celibacy and living in a secluded place and different things which he mentioned. And then he discussed that by following these things, then the vision which one will develop is that one will see Krishna present in or behind all of Krishna's energies. We see in the middle of the chapter that he describes that this is the realization one must attain through the practice of the Sankhya Yoga. That we begin to see Krishna and we remember Krishna whenever we see Krishna's energies. We see something in this material world and immediately that reminds us of Krishna or the source of that. So this is the goal which we are aspiring for. And then he gives, as the chapter goes on, he gives deeper realizations and principles of devotional service which will help us to attain that realization. So now we get to chapter 28, which is called? Yeah. So now you're going to further principles like this. Now, is anyone finding this portion of the Bhagavatam quite philosophical and quite difficult to understand?
Okay. Many questions, lingering questions and doubts are getting clarified.
Anyone else finding it difficult to understand or very challenging? Yeah. True.
I think it's very important, not difficult as much as very important to understand.
Very important to understand.
Very, very important.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a very deep section of the Bhagavatam, very philosophical section of the Bhagavatam. Whereas we saw in the previous section, then we had the pastime with Kardama and Devahuti. There was an entire pastime which was surrounding this section of the Bhagavatam. And there were basic principles of culture and etiquette and devotion which are being expounded. But here, Kapiladeva is speaking straight philosophy. And so it's a very technical part of the Bhagavatam. And to study it and to understand it and to get perfect clarity and understanding of this section is... takes a lot of concentration and study. So we'll finish this chapter, and then at the end of this chapter, then I'll do an overview of the five chapters, 24 to 28, and then we'll have the examination, which should be in probably about 3 weeks from now. So it won't be long, won't be far away. So I'll try to study the chapters deeply and then give a presentation on the entire five chapters together. I don't feel that I've got a deep enough grasp of the entire section at this point in time, but that just because Maya distracted me a great deal in the last month or so. It's just too much going on outside the classroom, and because of that I haven't got as deeply into the section as I want to, so now I'm trying to catch up and grasp it, so hopefully by the end of chapter 28 I'll be up to speed. So it's a bit unfortunate because it's a very technical part of the Bhagavatam and I haven't been able to go into it as deeply as I wanted just because of unforeseen circumstances. So now I'm trying to get there, but by the end of chapter 28 I want to be as versed as I can so I can present the five chapters and then we'll have the examination, and hopefully please forgive me for any shortcomings on my behalf, and hopefully it will be sufficient so that you can all pass your exam.
So more than passing the exam, is it possible for you to prepare a set of questions, a question bank, and so that, because this is very critical for us to understand Srimad Bhagavatam philosophy from this point onward, so that we have the answers for ourselves or you give the answers? This is what we did in the university, because we feel that the students must know this particular area. So therefore, we give a set of questions and we give the answers. They say, you study this question, study these answers and come to the club, and we give them.
That's already in the study book which you have.
So that is there.
Yeah, that is there. The content is there. The questions are there. The section themes are there. There's all the basic, everything is there in that book. So, and yeah, I mean, that will be sufficient for you to prepare for you. And plus, in, you know, the 12th aim of the course is self-study, responsibility for learning. So you also have to take the responsibility to study it very carefully. That's what I'm doing. Because, you know, the main reason why I teach this course is for my own purification. And I don't feel that I've studied it as well as I'd like to up until now. So that's why I'm really trying to study it as carefully as I can, so that I have a full grasp and then I can present it to you as much as I can so that we can all benefit. So you'll have to study as much as you can. Use the guidebook and then I'll try to overview everything as nicely as I can. So
can I say something on the same?
No. No, I was joking.
Well, the thing is that at the end of the examination, if we know somebody has done a good answer, maybe you can highlight that. That will give us the information how we should write the answer of the question. Something like that. What can she say?
Usually when I hand the exams out, I usually mention here at the top.
Yeah.
Like students.
But then you won't know that, because that's for the individual written. But if you can highlight, say, Murli did this question very well, this was the answer, That's what I expect. It's
okay.
More interesting.
Okay, I'll try to.
Actually, in that book, the questions are there, but the answers are not there. So maybe you can tell us the answer and pick up what we're saying.
Okay, I'll have to.
What we'll do is we'll come with those questions and Prabhu is giving to somebody so that he'll answer.
Okay.
Each one of us will put those one question.
What I'll do is that when I mark the exam, if there's any deficiency in anyone's answers, I'll take it as my responsibility for not teaching properly and I'll give you full marks.
Prabhu, mark is not required.
Mark is everything, come on.
Why else do we do this course?
I don't think anyone's
no, because I love marking the exams and you love doing them. And that is the.
Where is Mahaprasad from yesterday for us, Prabhu?
From the feast? Mm-hmm. We served it all out at the feast.
So he tends a little piece for us. Your dear school.
That's true. I haven't done that. So that's my shortcoming and fault. So please forgive me.
Sorry.
I'm not doing very well at this point in my life. a lot of faults, a lot of deficiencies. Krishna's making me more humble. A lot of things I'm missing. So I'll try, next year I'll try to keep you something. Thanks. So now chapter 28. Chapter 28 is called?
Kapila's instruction on the devotional service.
Okay. So now, Kapila will give further instructions on how devotional service should be practice. Lock the door. So we'll go from verses 1 to 12 tonight. Now Kapila Dev, because Kapila Dev is speaking to Devahuti a very long time ago, it seems like it is Satyayuga, that kind of time, a long time back in the universe. So he recommends as the means of devotional service Ashtanga Yoga. So we'll see tonight Ashtanga Yoga will be practiced. Described. Mm-hmm. So Ashtanga Yoga was the means of realization in Satyayuga. Mm-hmm. By Ashtanga then one would become perfect in his realization. This was the system. Mm-hmm. So Kapila Dev is going to describe how to practice this system of Ashtanga. And Srila Prabhupada in his purports will bring the points to the modern day context of the Kali Yuga, where we cannot practice very easily Ashtanga Yoga because of the disqualifications that we have. So therefore he brings it into the modern context where we must practice Sankirtan Jagya in order to become perfect. That is the Yuga Dharma, as opposed to meditation in the previous age. Okay. But still there are many principles which Prabhupada correlates, or he says these are equally important. Right? There are certain principles which are equal. Now we see in chapter 23, I think it was, like that. That we saw that, or even earlier, we saw that Kadama Muni, he was practicing Ashtanga Yoga, but Prabhupada emphasizes that it was mixed with the basic and important principles of Bhakti Yoga, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, like that. So, regardless, even if one practices Ashtanga Yoga, one must practice Bhakti Yoga, or devotional service, in order for it to become perfect. So either the Ashtanga process is based upon the Bhakti principles, or it is done with Krishna in mind as being the ultimate goal of meditation. Like that. So we'll see these principles tonight. Just like at the beginning of chapter 27, there are certain principles we must apply. So these principles will be described again, actually. Very similar principles here. We had group work last time we did this. At the beginning of chapter 27, we broke into groups. So remember you said that if we could go into it in more detail. So tonight, then we'll just do it in open discussion. So it's almost the same principles, actually. So we can go into more detail like that. Okay. The personality of Godhead said, "My dear mother, O daughter of the king, now I shall explain to you the system of yoga, the object of which is to concentrate the mind, By practicing this system, one can become joyful and progressively advance towards the path
of the absolute truth. Hmm.
So what is the goal of yoga?
To connect to the mind.
To connect, yeah.
Control the mind at the first stage.
Yeah.
The immediate objective of yoga is to control the mind.
Yeah.
The ultimate goal is obviously to realize the absolute truth.
Yeah.
But the immediate goal is to control the mind.
Yeah. So the purpose of yoga is to control the mind. It means to fix the mind on a particular point. So we have the eight principles of yoga. Yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, pratyahara, dharana, and samadhi. So these are the eight principles of Ashtanga Yoga. Ashta, Anga, eight limbs of yoga. So the whole purpose is to reach Samadhi. Samadhi. D means?
Meditation,
yeah. Concentration. Meditation, concentration, like that. This is D. Like Dhyan. Dhyan means?
Buddhi.
Hmm? Dhyan.
Dhi refers to buddhi.
No, it means concentration.
Okay.
No. Dhi, like that. So dhyan, but just like the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita is called? Dhyan yoga. Dhyan means? Meditation, to meditate, right? So sama, dhi. Dhi means meditation. Sama means?
Equal.
So it means fixing the mind on one point. That is the point. That is the point of yoga. To bring the mind under control, to fix them on one point. Krishna says at the end of the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he says that of all yogis, the greatest is the devotee, or one who can fix his mind upon Krishna. This is the highest principle of yoga. And this is the most successful yogi is one who can fix his mind upon Krishna. Like that. So that is the point of yoga, to give the mind under control and to fix it on one point, and that point must be Krishna. Prabhupada says, it is not that the practice of yoga is for something impersonal. Just like these days, what do people say the goal of yoga is?
Physical exercise.
Physical exercise, yeah.
Bodybuilding.
Health.
Relaxing, yeah. Bodybuilding, yeah. Health, yeah.
Sex life.
Sex life, increase your sexual potency.
Yeah, that's what they are for.
Yeah, that's one of the goals, one of the benefits. Like that. Many people say the goal of yoga is to realize we are all one. Where did this come from? Prabhupada points out in this section of the Bhagavatam, where is the authorization? That everything, if you look at Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, this is where the Ashtanga system is described by Patanjali, who is an incarnation of the Lord. And he describes that one must concentrate the mind on Vishnu, right? On the Supreme, on the personality of Godhead. So this impersonalism, this voidism, it is a speculative philosophy. It is not the original Vedic philosophy, as Nisrini Kavacha Prabhu was speaking in the Bhagavatam class this morning. It is not the original philosophy of the Vedas. It is a misconstrued, or it is a concocted philosophy of the Vedas. Take the Vedic literature and then misconstrue it, juggle the words. Prabhupada said word jugglery. You just juggle the words around so it sounds like something else. But actually that's not the goal of the Vedas. Right? The goal of the Vedas is to realize the personality of Godhead, not to realize something impersonal. So generally when you speak to Mayavadis, or someone who's an impersonalist, they tend to juggle the words a lot. And it's very funny sometimes, you know, you catch them out. You know, you say, well, you're saying the same thing, but you're just throwing the words around. You know, what's your point? Like that. And then they become, sometimes they become a little bit affected and they become a little bit angry. And they try to control it, but you know, you can see they're becoming disturbed when you actually try to catch them out. You're just juggling the words around. What's the actual point? Right? And what is your authorization to say all this? You know, everything is one. Where is the authorization? Right? We'll see in this section of the Bhagavatam, as Nisrin Kavacha Prabhu was explaining in the class this morning, the Bhagavatam is the final praman, or the final, as Jiva Goswami says in the Tattva Sandhava, in the Sandhavas, he says it is the final evidence of all evidences. I think Jiva Goswami lists like 10 evidences or something like that. So there's different ways of understanding knowledge, or tattva, or the truth. But out of all evidences, the Bhagavatam is considered to be the highest. And we'll see as we go through this section, verses 1 to 12, it describes, the Bhagavatam actually says, Vaikuntha Lila. What does Vaikuntha Lila mean?
Pastimes in the Lord and Vaikuntha.
Yeah, the pastimes in Vaikuntha. This is not impersonal. Vaikuntha Lila is not impersonal. That's why it said the Mayavadis cannot touch the Bhagavatam. Yeah, because it does. It says Vaikuntha Lila. It directly says it. That is the goal of Ashtanga Yoga. Right? We're talking about Ashtanga Yoga specifically in this section. And the whole concoction the world has these days in the East and the West is that yoga is meant to understand something impersonal. So if yoga is meant to understand something impersonal, then why is it saying Vaikuntha Lila? It's speaking specifically about Ashtanga Yoga. Right? It's being spoken by Kapila Dev himself, who is the incarnation of God. You know, the topmost Muni, topmost sage, the most elevated personality. And he's saying that the goal of this yoga system, this Ashtanga system, is to realize Vaikuntha Lila, the pastimes in the spiritual world. So where is the impersonalism? It's concoction. Right? We can defeat this Mayavada philosophy. If we become expert in the Bhagavatam, we can defeat their philosophy. Right? Prabhupada says when you debate with someone, you find their weak spot and you kick it and you kick it and you kick it until they go down. Right? Just like a karate fighter. Right? Prabhupada said, just like if you're expert in karate, right, you find the weak spot and you just kick and kick and kick until they go down. So Prabhupada said the same thing. When you're debating with someone, right, then you find the weak spot and you just kick and kick and kick until they're defeated. Like that. So we can defeat this Mayavada philosophy based on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Why is Kapila saying it? There's no impersonal. Patanjali does not speak of something impersonal. Right? He speaks of a personal, a personality which we must meditate on. Samadhi. Fix the mind on one point. Right? That point is Vaikuntha Lila. That point is the personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada says here, you should fix your mind on Krishna. Because he is the Adi Purusha, he is the original personality. And the Bhagavatam, because we are Gaudiyas, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, then we directly aspire to meditate upon Krishna. Like that. Any questions or comments so far? Yes, sir.
I'm not sure if you heard of Deepak Chopra.
Have I heard of him?
Yes. So,
one of my friends met him in Singapore airport.
He's like well-known philosopher, physicist of Indian origin. One of my friends was reading his book, Beyond Life and Death. He take all his things from scriptures like Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam and present them like in a flowery way. So the point that I'm trying to make, and then I ask, what's the outcome? What he got out of this? So he says, okay, there is God. Okay, I said that's part one. Then says, it's like a light. I said that you don't have to worry about it. And I just feel so sorry for the Western people because he's very well reputed among Western readers. One of the things he says, the pain and suffering that you get after your death, it depends on how much self-realized person you are.
Like Nisrin Kavacha Prabhu said this morning in the class, and Prabhupada said in his pranam mantra, which he wrote for himself, Nirvisesh Shunyavad Paschatya Desha Dharin. Right? Gauravani Pracharine. Right? Preaching Gauravani. Instructions of Gauranga, Chaitanya Dev, Mahaprabhu. Right? To defeat, right? Because the whole world has been captured now by Nirvisesh Shunyavad. Either everyone's a Buddhist or they're a Mayavadi. Right, everyone, practically. Now, this is the philosophy which has taken over the East and the West now. So we just have to preach and defeat this. Just like the last Sunday feast class we gave at the farm a couple of weeks ago. First thing I said, because we were speaking Bhagavad Gita chapter 2 verse 11. That's where we're up to in the Sunday feast lectures. So the first thing I said, what does it say? Verse 11, chapter 2, Bhagavad Gita.
Questions
by Arjuna. Has anyone read the Bhagavad Gita?
Yeah.
Okay. What is it? What's the verse? Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, verse 11.
Asochiyam.
Like that. Yeah. Okay, first thing it says is Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, right? So first thing I emphasize, who is this Bhagavan? Right? Don't even worry about, you know, you're not the body or the spirit. First you understand God is a person. Who is speaking here? God is a person. And there's a few Indian people there from Geelong, some guests. And first thing they said, he is light, he is love, he is everything, like that. And they were sincere. You know, they had some feeling, but totally misguided, misdirected. So we had to go back to the basic point and prove beyond doubt as much as we can, God is a personality. This is the message of the Bhagavat. Bhagavat means personality. Srimad Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. The pastimes, the beautiful pastimes of the personality of Godhead. Yeah? So this is our mission, is to preach and establish this. And it can be done. If we're expert in the Bhagavatam, we can defeat. We can establish. The goal of yoga is Vaikuntha Lila. It is not some speculation. You know, they just juggle words and say it is light or it is love or like that. But this is not that.
Could you please tell us in short how did you prove it?
How did you prove it?
How you did?
You have to listen to the lecture. No one taped it. Come to the farm next time.
Yeah, okay.
Because more Mayavadis will come and then we'll have to.
Yeah.
Same point every time. Every lecture we have to establish these basic points before we can go any further. Okay. One should execute his prescribed duties to the best of his ability and avoid performing duties not allotted to him. One should be satisfied with as much gain as he achieves by the grace of the Lord, and one should worship the lotus feet of a spiritual master. So these basic principles, which is spoken of here in verses 2, 3 and 4, this is Yama and Niyama. This is the beginning of Ashtanga Yoga. There are things that you must accept and things that you must reject. Right? You can't make advancement until you reject certain things and you accept certain things. This is true in all spiritual paths. As Prabhupada says here. Prabhupada says in these purports, he says, what is the most important item of sense control? Any mentions?
Celibacy.
Celibacy. Very good. You're the only one who read the purports. So, the most important item of sense control is celibacy. This will be mentioned two times in this section. So, if one is not practicing these things, Prabhupada says you cannot realize God. You can't become self-realized. You cannot become Krishna conscious. You can't be successful in any spiritual path. Prabhupada mentions that some rascals, right, they say that you can have as much sex life as you want and still you can realize you are a God.
That Prabhupada, niche.
Huh?
That niche.
You're not supposed to say that. Prabhupada would never say the name of the person. Anyway, so we know who it is. Like that. So this is the philosophy they put forward. But Prabhupada points out in this, he said, where is the authorization? Where does it say anywhere in the Vedas you can have sex life and become self-realized? Where does it say it? There's no authorization. Right? They say these things, but where is their authority? Right? Do not speak unless you follow authority. Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita. Right, this is one of the items of controlled speech. One must be following an authority. Right? What are you saying? Right? If there's no authority. Just like we question devotees sometimes. Someone says something, so where is that from? Where does that come from? Right? Where is that particular item? Like that.
Now, we tell a story or we say some quote or something like that, but then the devotees say to us, that, where is it from? What is the reference? Right? There must be authority. So if someone says you can have sense gratification and spiritual life together, no, you cannot. Unless it is regulated, that's what Kapila teaches. Not that, not unrestricted. Not just have as much sex as you want, and then you'll also realize God. Right? Not possible. Impossible. Right? So Prabhupada points this out. So the first point, which is made here, is Prabhupada says one should inquire from and worship a guru. Right? Prabhupada says in the purport, you must seek out a spiritual master. Right? You can only understand the absolute truth when you take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. Therefore, the goal of life is to seek out a spiritual master. This is a sign of humility. If one does not have genuine humility, one cannot make advancement in spiritual life. If someone is very proud, somewhat arrogant, then they will think, just like these days, also very prominent or popular philosophy, the truth is within you. Right? You have the truth within you. You can realize the truth. But there's a certain pride or arrogance in that. Because anyone knows that in any other field of knowledge, anything, any material knowledge, you have to accept authority. Right? Just like all of you have a particular qualification. You know, you all went to university. Right? You got a qualification. You got a degree. Right? Where does it say at the university? You know, if you don't like, you know, the university, if you don't like the course, if you don't like the professors, you just go. It's all within you, and you will realize it, right? And you can write your own certificate and go and become a lawyer or a doctor or an accountant, and that's okay. But you're authorized because it's within you, right? You know all the laws. You know how to do brain surgery, and you can do any type of accounting. Right? I didn't study anything. I didn't accept any authority, but I just understand everything. Right? So what is your qualification, right? So even in material science, we must have some authority. So in spiritual science, it begins when you accept an authority. Then it begins. Right? That is your humility. Right? Krishna says, Prabhupada explains this in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna didn't begin to speak until Arjuna accepted his authority. Right? You accept me as guru, now I will speak. Right? Are we friends? Right? I will not instruct. Am I guru? now I speak. Right? And then first thing he did, chastise me. You are speaking learned words, but you are lamenting for that which is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. First thing that Krishna spoke like that. So Krishna waited until he accepted his authority. So this is why we must seek out a spiritual master. We must have the right attitude. That means we are ready to progress in spiritual life. And that's the problem with the world these days. Very hard for people to surrender. Hard for people to surrender to a person. Just like there's one video of Prabhupada in Sydney in 1970 and 74, something like that. And Prabhupada comes out of the temple, which is just like a little shop front somewhere in Sydney, and he gets into the combi van and they drive away and the camera's there. And the disciples, Prabhupada's disciples, are bowing on the ground on the footpath, all bowing down, you know, wearing sheets and bowing down on the ground. And all the Western people walking around, you know, 1970s in Australia, like walking around thinking, you know, what's this? People with shaved heads and saris and sheets and bowing on the ground as the car drives off. You know, what is that? It's very strange, like that. So then they said to one of the Mataji's, one of Prabhupada's disciples, they said, why are you doing this? And she explained, because if you do not accept the guru who is a representative of God, you cannot make advancement in spiritual life. That is the item of submission. What is the item of submission? You must bow before the guru. That shows humility. This is how spiritual life begins, when you become humble before the guru. So it says here that we must inquire from him, accept his instructions, and specifically Kapila Dev uses which word in regards to how we deal with the guru.
Worship,
yeah. What's the Sanskrit? Which
is?
Archana. Now, what does archana mean? worship. We should treat the guru like we treat the deity. He's God's representative. He's God's representative. Now, Archana means you worship the spiritual master. And I was discussing this yesterday with my wife after Vyasa Puja. Yesterday we had Tamal Krishnananda's Vyasa Puja, very ecstatic program that we had. And my wife and I were discussing afterwards that the culture these days is becoming less to worship the guru than previously in this time, right? Because the different gurus fell down and so forth, and we're taping this, but I will say this anyway, that this may be a little controversial, that we're all very close to me, so you know what I'm, you know me like this, because many gurus were falling down, and then the GBC actually minimised the guru worship, because they said that, you know, that this is causing problems for the gurus, that they will, if you worship too much worship, then it will can cause problem for the guru, like that, and then some of the gurus were falling down and so forth. This is the confidential part. But my spiritual master said to me one day, Tamal Krishnananda, he said, "I don't agree with the GBC." Like that. Not that he was like, you know, being like totally rebellious, but he said, "I don't agree with this point." And actually, he never changed his worship, like, because they said the Vyasa Pujas must become very, like, less, they'll become very elaborate and all. He said, well, he didn't say, but on his Vyasa Pujas, he never changed it. So everyone would come, big Vyasa Puja, he would sit on the asana, full arti, foot bathing, push panjali, kirtan, massive feast, didn't change it. And I tend to agree with that. This may be a little controversial, so I'm trying to understand, I'm trying to say this in context like that. But, you know, it's an important item of etiquette that we must, it says, Kapila is saying, Archana is saying, worship the guru. Because you have to have the right attitude towards the spiritual master to receive the instructions from him within the heart. It's the duty of the disciple to worship the guru. Right? So we have to treat the guru as Krishna's representative, not different from Krishna. Like that. So the GBC is saying something, and I'm not saying like that. I think you all understand my point, because we know each other quite well. But the point I'm making is that we should follow the GBC, and we should follow the GBC, which means that we should not cause, like, you know, public disturbance, outcry, debate, or some disturbance. So follow what is being said, but at the same time worship guru. Don't minimise like that, because the danger is you minimise within the consciousness, you can commit offences, because you think you are equal to the guru. That's the point, you're not equal to the guru. Right? Oh, we don't have to do so much worship. You know, it's dangerous, it's careful, you have to be very careful, because you're not equal to the spiritual master. If you become familiar with him, you may commit offences, and that blocks the spiritual life. So it's very important, these things. So I'm saying these things, I'm trying to be very delicate in the way we're saying.
You're so very right.
Yeah, I know, but I might get in trouble.
I don't know if you think some of that decision was based on the fact that some gurus are falling down, and to differentiate between Krishna worship in Prabhupada and the new gurus.
Yeah.
To show that there's actually a difference.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah, this they've been kept because Prabhupada's position may be underemphasized.
Yeah. And it was being
Yeah, that's true.
So maybe it was a bit of a moment.
Yeah, maybe.
Back into line.
No, it's good. That's a very good point. But I was just trying to make like a balanced light point like that. But the point is that we should worship the guru. That's the point. But also follow the GBC.
Can I say something on the same point? In 1991, I was in Heidelberg in Germany. And Satyavan Swami Vyas Puja was there. And the people were really so respectful and wonderful Vyas Puja. And when he spoke, he said, "I'm accepting this only because it is the, I am feeling a representative of Vyasdev. That's how I'm accepting. Otherwise, I won't accept.
Oh.
It's so great actually. Oh. So we have to really do the best worship as well.
That's the point.
So there is a lot of mails and then counter arguments coming from the Ritvik people. Is that the reason why there is something happening in this?
Maybe. Also, even just from the devotees within ISKCON, many of them just thought that, you know, maybe the emphasis has been taken off Prabhupada too much, or, and because some gurus were falling down, you know, because they're accepting so much worship, like on such a high level, but then falling down, so then it can cause problems for them as an individual. Yeah, because they may not be on the level of Prabhupada as yet, so it's like a delicate thing. But the point is that I'm trying to make is that we should worship our guru. That's what Kapila Dev is instructing us.
So, as a part of the morning sadhana, if you're chanting Sansara Bhavana and Vrinda Loka, you should still do Guru Charan.
We should do.
As a part of the morning sadhana.
Yeah, that part.
Guru Mangala, Sansara Bhavana and Vrinda Loka.
Yeah. The next prayer, Sri Guru Charana Padma,
yeah,
which means the one that we sing at Guru Puja time in the temple. Usually at home I just sing one or the other, like that. But the point is, because they're both glorifying the Guru, so really technically, I mean, you could sing either prayer, but the point is that you worship the Guru on a daily basis. Before you worship Mahaprabhu, then you have to worship Guru. Guru and then Gauranga and then Radha and Krishna, like that.
Prabhupada would say when he was given worship, he would give it then to Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj,
yeah,
pass it on.
Yeah, the Guru does not feel that he's being worshipped, but it's our duty to offer that respect and worship. So then, the next item which is mentioned here is that we should act according to our nature. One should execute his prescribed duties to the best of his ability and avoid performing duties not allotted to him. So Prabhupada says within the purport that we should perform duties according to our nature. So if you have brahminical tendency, you perform brahminical duties. If you have kshatriya tendency, you perform kshatriya. If you have vaishya, you do like that. But then Prabhupada says, overriding the entire thing is Sanatan Dharma. You know, what is even greater is just to become a servant of Krishna. And if one's a servant of Krishna, then one can give up any of his worldly duties. It's not necessary to perform any of our material obligations, which is what the Bhagavatam teaches. That if you surrender to Krishna, you don't have any obligation to any material personality. One should cease performing conventional religious practices and should be attracted to those which lead to salvation. One should eat very frugally and should always remain secluded so that he can achieve the highest perfection of life. So as it says here once again, one should cease performing conventional religious practices. So it means people do, like if you go to India, they do, just like usually when I go, it's usually just after or just around about the time of Kali Puja in Bengal, which is full on. Have anyone been to Calcutta, Kali Puja?
Yeah.
Time? They build out of bamboo. They make these bamboo like temples and structures for the worship of Kali. And some of them are amazing. Like they had one in Calcutta which was made from bamboo, and then they put cloth around it, and they built one like the Titanic, and it was almost as big as the Titanic, right? And it was that was the mandir, and then you went inside and then Kali was there and you worship Kali. Yeah, and when I go there, there's all these huge temples they build, just temporary temples, just out of bamboo, make cloth, make a temporary temple for 1 week, 2 weeks. Everyone goes in there and they worship Kali, but what's the whole worship based upon? It's just religious ceremony based on what? Give me wealth. Fulfill my material desires. Kali is the goddess of Durga. She's the goddess of the material energy. So why do we approach her for? To fulfill our material desires. So the Bhagavatam says you must reject that. Right? That should not be the way we should approach Krishna.
sometimes people approach Krishna, but they have the same kind of mentality. That we do, like, we do some religious puja and we get some benefit in return. People come to the temple, they do some puja, right? They come in and they do all their different things. I mean, no one knows what it means. Or they come and they ring the bell in the four directions. They come in the temple, and then when they go out of the temple, there's no one in the shastra. It says when you leave it, it says before you enter the temple, you must make some sound. It says the nectar of devotion. But where does it say in any scripture that you make a sound as you leave? Right? It's like leaving someone's house and ringing the doorbell. I'm going now. Ding, ding. They, as they're leaving, they do this thing where they ring the bell in four directions and they go. They don't even know what they're doing. It's just called, how do you say it? It's just like religious ceremony. They saw some other guy doing it, right? And then they go and do it, and then it just becomes like the ceremony. Prabhupada does the story of the cat in the basket. We told that story before. Does anyone remember that one? The cat in the basket. There was some wedding, some Hindu wedding, like a few hundred years ago, and there was a cat, and the cat was running all over the place. So someone got the cat and put it under the basket to stop it from running all over the place, right? Because it was disturbing the wedding. But then someone saw, the old lady put the cat under the basket. So they thought, whenever you have a wedding, you have to have a cat under a basket. So now, even today in India, one of the things, Prabhupada says, one of the items at the Hindu weddings is the cat's under the basket. Where's the cat? Where's the cat? It's got nothing to do with anything. Right? So this is the way that religion can become. So we have to be careful that our worship of Krishna does not become in any way contaminated by these mundane kind of sentiments. It must be authorized by the acharyas. Everything we do must be authorized by the acharyas. Why are you doing it? Right? If it's not authorized by the acharya. And what is the motivation? Don't treat Krishna like people treat Kali or Durga or Shiva. Krishna is not like that. Don't go to Krishna and say, can I have this, can I have that? Because that's what goes on. People come, they drop a little bit of money in the hundi. Krishna, here's 20 cents, give me $1 million. Right? That's just material consciousness. So the deity worship should not become like that. And then the Bhagavatam says one should eat frugally. What does Prabhupada say in the purport? How much should you eat?
Half.
Right? Prabhupada said if you feel like eating 1 pound, then eat half a pound. And then Prabhupada said 4 ounces of water, and then leave 1/4 of the stomach for air. Prabhupada says in the purport. So half of what you feel like eating you eat, right? Then 1/4 water, and then 1/4
air.
Right, this is yoga. Right. And then what's the next one? Eat frugally and live in a secluded place. So then this is recommended. It's very nice to live in a secluded place. I know now, because my life has gone in such a direction that I live in a secluded place, and it's good. It has a lot of advantages. One advantage is there's no one to annoy you. Because as soon as you walk out of the house, normally, when you're living in the city, there's so many people who annoy you. As soon as you walk out. If you stay in a place where there's not many people around, that's the advantage. The disadvantage is there's no one to talk to. Like that. So it has its pros and cons.
Living secluded also means that you associate only with the Vaishnavas and not with the materialists. It's basically
Yeah, you can say like that. It's also nice, you'll see when we read in the previous chapter of when Swayambhuva Manu went to visit Kashyapa, then he went to the hermitages. So the sages went away to a very peaceful place, Bindu Sarovara, which is away from civilization, and they practiced their spiritual life there. So it's very nice to do that. But in the cities it's difficult, so then we have nice temple. Especially this temple is so beautiful. We have a courtyard and many things. So we can come here, we can get away to a great extent like this. Yes, sir.
I just wanted to ask, Shiv, I heard... About Bharat Maharaj.
Yeah.
He was in a bhava stage. the event into a secluded place. And the reason for his fall down was because of the fact that he actually did not have any association. So when we say about a secluded place,
yeah, it simply means take a few people with you. It's like a new underground, you know. I said to Mani Guru, I said, I'll go, but you have to come. Because I'm not going by myself. That's, I've got a few people there. When I mean there's no one to annoy you, there's a few people to annoy you. You've got to have a few people. But secluded means away from like a very congested place.
I think he was given a special that thing to do it. He was by Lord, because he had to come back in the next life and then he had to teach the king.
But Prabhupada mentions Bhara Maharaj is in which canon? 5th or 6th? Bhara Maharaj 6th canon. Ajamil is in the 6th. I think Bhara Maharaj is at the end of the 5th or in the 6th canon, like that. Prabhupada mentions at that point that the reason he fell down was because he did not have a guru.
Yeah, but somebody told me, I think it was one of the Maharajas, that that was a special circumstance.
Yeah, it was special. The whole pastime was quite.
Yeah.
He's a very elevated person, so it was.
So he did it because of some purpose.
Well, Krishna may have done it for some purpose. But
because he had to teach the king.
Rahugana.
Yeah, the next
one. One should practice non-violence and truthfulness. One should avoid thieving and be satisfied with possessing as much as he needs for his maintenance. He should abstain from sex life, perform austerity, be clean, study the Vedas, and worship the supreme form of the personality of Godhead. So at the end of the verse it says one should worship the supreme form of the personality of Krishna. Now Prabhupada says that this means that one should worship the deity every day. Even if one is practicing Ashtanga Yoga, Prabhupada says you should worship the deity every day. So it means in your home then you should have a picture of Krishna. Or if you can, have a deity of Krishna, like that. If you cannot have a deity in your home, then at least have a picture, like that. And every day there should be some puja, like that. It means you have to offer some incense, or you can offer some bhoga, like that. Offer some flour, even if it's just a very basic items of service. But there should be some worship of the deity, even in the Ashtanga process, Prabhupada said there has to be some deity worship on a daily basis. So every day you have to make sure that some part of your day is dedicated to some deity worship. And Prabhupada mentions that one must practice brahmacharya. This is the first place he mentions. It's mentioned twice in this section. One must practice celibacy. You cannot become self-realized if you do not practice celibacy. And if you read in this purport, which is verse 4, then you'll see Prabhupada gives a very wonderful paragraph about brahmacharya and the importance of it and all the benefits of it. And Prabhupada says it's not possible. Don't be dissuaded. Don't be contaminated by materialists who say you can practice spiritual life and sex life together, sense gratification and spiritual life. It's not possible. You have to practice one or the other. Then the Bhagavad Gita says one should not collect too much wealth. Prabhupada says that you should not be a thief. Prabhupada points out that if you are accumulating wealth, if you accumulate too much just for sense gratification, or too many material possessions just for sense gratification, then you are stena. Stena means you are a thief, and you will get reactions. And that's what it's like, you know, in this day and age. I know, like, my family members and so forth, I go to their houses, and the houses are just full of paraphernalia.
and they don't need it. You know, you open up the cupboard and there's like, you know, five different kinds of dinner sets, right? Not necessary, right? And this kind of accumulation of wealth, which should be used, that energy, that Lakshmi, should be used in the service of Krishna. That's the point. That's the point. You have your basic necessities. Krishna says in the Ishopanishad, there's the Ishabhasya principle. That means you have your quota. Everyone's allowed to have what they're allowed to have. That's okay. But as soon as you go beyond that quota, then that is the mentality of a thief. Right? You're stealing from Krishna. Right? Because you already have your quota, and now that which is meant to be used to worship Krishna, you're keeping for yourself. So you're a thief. So what happens to a thief? Yeah, it gets punished. There'll be a reaction. Right? And that's what we see happens. We accumulate too much, and inauspicious things take place. Right? You get too much, and then what happens? You just get anxiety. Right? But if you keep everything simple, anxiety is minimized. That's the point. And then it mentions that one must read Vedic literature. So Prabhupada points out, even on the Ashtanga path, the Ashtanga path means they're meant to go to the forest and do meditation. Right? But even on that path, Prabhupada says, every day they must read Vedic literature. That's how important it is. Every day we must hear from Guru, Sattva and Shastra. Every day. We must read, we must do some deity worship, we must practice celibacy, we must not accumulate too much wealth. These are basic principles of Ashtanga Yoga. They're basic principles of Krishna consciousness as well. So we must practice these things to get the result. Don't think you can get the result of becoming Krishna conscious and neglect any of these things. Right? If you neglect the guru, you can't become Krishna conscious. Right? If you don't eat frugally, right? If you eat too much, right? You can't become Krishna conscious. If you do not practice celibacy, you cannot become Krishna conscious. Right? If you keep too much of your wealth, you can't become Krishna conscious. If you don't read the Vedas every day, if you don't worship the deity every day, you can't become Krishna conscious. These are the basic principles. Like that. Prabhupada said, if you neglect them, then you can't get the result. Therefore, you follow yama niyama. Yama means accept things, niyama means reject things. Right? Some things must be accepted, some must be rejected. Like that. If you do not do it, you don't make advancement. You stay just on the beginning platform. Like that. If you want to advance, then you have to practice the beginning things.
So in terms of wealth, how do you quantify what is too much, what is too less, what is just required?
When you start getting like two of everything.
So not two cars.
Two cars
not
means
two houses.
Two houses starts becoming, unless you can justify you need it. Two cars means these days, you know, like, okay, then, you know, the wife needs a car because she has to look after the kids, and then the husband needs a car because he goes to work all day, so then maybe two cars you can justify. But then, you know, two houses,
one for the child, future, one for myself.
Yeah, so then
justification, yeah. You can always do on some count or other.
So then you have to see how it begins to affect your consciousness.
Nice.
You know, that's the point. And it's sometimes hard to be honest. So then you need Vaishnavas and you need Guru to look over your shoulder all the time.
But two houses are good. We used to have two, and one that the devotees used to stay.
Yeah, I stayed there, remember?
Yeah.
I stayed there. When you're in Newcastle.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
You don't remember?
I don't remember you.
Yeah, I was only young. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Remember I stayed with you? I was only being devoted for about 2 years or something. Yeah, I remember that. Okay. One must observe silence. Acquire steadiness by practicing different yogic postures, controlling the breathing of the vital air. Withdraw the senses from the sense objects and concentrate the mind on the heart. So, one must observe
Mauna.
Mauna means?
Silence.
Silence means? Bhishma says in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, he says that gravity comes from Mauna. Yeah, from silence. By being silent, then one becomes grave in spiritual life.
Sometimes people talk too much, just waffling on and on and on. It is not good for spiritual life.
Most of the
time, yeah.
Especially my babies.
What's that?
Especially my babies.
Did you hear that?
I'm not talking about these my babies, bro. Why?
Then who are you talking?
A gender is
it? Oh, general.
So suddenly I remember my office colleague Swati, so I always try to keep away from
her. So the point is, people should not speak too much like that. The point is that if the conversation is not, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, it must be truthful, it must be beneficial, it must be pleasing, it must be based upon Shastra. Okay? This is the point of our speech. If it doesn't have these qualities, then we should not be speaking so much. Prabhupada says in the Gita that a fool is... how does he say? Yeah, a fool is not recognized until he opens his mouth. So then when someone is foolish, as soon as they begin to speak, then you know. Like that. So better to be, if you don't have something constructive to say, better not to say so much. It's good for spiritual life to actually practice mourna. Veda Priya went to one ashram about 5 years ago, to a Sachinandan yoga ashram. It's one of the yoga groups. Because she wanted to study them to see how to run our retreats when we first began to run retreats. So she went and stayed with them and did a retreat with them. And she learned many good things. I mean, they're Mayavadis, but they have many good principles. They practice many of these same principles, yama niyama. But their final goal is wrong. But she said one of the rules in the retreat is that you had to observe mauna until after breakfast. That's a rule in the ashram. So until like 8 o'clock in the morning, no one's allowed to speak. Right, you're only allowed to chant japa or do bhajan or like that, but no speaking. Yeah. It's a very good principle in spiritual life. Like that. It saves a lot of headaches.
I found, because I've attended a retreat by, it's an Art of Living Foundation in Bangalore. I was in that ashram with, it's called Pandit Harishanji, Sri Harishanji. And typically, there is a program in which you require to remain at Maunam for 5 days, 6 days continuously. Mm. No talking. If at all, you can't. If you want to talk, you can talk to your plant or a flower. That's the, at the most you can do there. Otherwise, no communication with anyone. Mm. Sometimes he says that you don't even talk to yourself.
Yeah, it's good practice. Maunam is a good. Very beneficial for spiritual life. So we have to practice some mauna.
Prabhuji, one thing I can't understand. You say you should live in a secluded place. And then you said that read the Vedic literature. So if you live in a secluded place, how can you carry all the things to read?
Yeah, you have a bookshelf.
That won't be a secluded place, will it?
Sometimes your questions are beyond my capacity to. I live in a secluded place. I keep my books on the bookshelf. So I don't know. Maybe I'm not advanced enough to answer the question.
Secluded place means there's nothing there.
Oh, that's secluded place.
That's
secluded. You mean like a Himalaya?
Something like that.
Is that what you mean? Okay, tell me what it's like when you get there.
Prabhu, why not in our retreats?
Hey, Shekhar, I want to keep going. Fixing the vital air and the mind in one of the six circles of vital air circulation within the body, thus concentrating one's mind on the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is called samadhi or samadhana of the mind. So this is the verse where the Kapila Dev says, Vaikuntha Lila. Mm. This is the point of yoga meditation. The point of Krishna consciousness is to fix the mind on Krishna. As Kapila says here, Vaikuntha Lila. Right? We should be meditating on Krishna Lila Smaranam. Ashta Kaliya Lila. This is the goal of Krishna consciousness. This is Samadhi. The one is always thinking of Krishna. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita,
Mammana Baba Madbhakto. He says, always think of me. Manmana. Right? Pava with ba like that. Always, that is the goal. Rupa Goswami says, always think of Krishna, never forget Krishna. No? That is the goal of our Krishna consciousness. So it is to absorb oneself on the platform of samadhi, where one is always remembering Krishna's pastimes. That is the goal of Krishna consciousness. Whether one practices Ashtanga or one practices the Yuga Dharma of Sankirtan and Kali Yuga, that is the point. That is the goal which we are aiming for. By these processes or any other true process, one must control the contaminated, unbridled mind which is always attracted by material enjoyment and thus fix himself in thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada mentions in the purport, as Krishna mentions in the 6th chapter, this section of the Bhagavatam is very similar to the 6th chapter of the Gita, because Krishna is speaking of Ashtanga there also. So Srila Prabhupada mentions that, as Krishna teaches in the 6th chapter, the mind can be the best of friends or the worst of enemies. And this is how we must deal with the mind while we're doing our sadhana. One secret with the mind is the mind is like a child. Right? A child does not like to accept negative instruction, negative injunction. Just like you say to the child, do not do this. The child likes it? No, he doesn't like it, right? So say, you don't say to the child, do not do, I mean, we do sometimes, say, do not do this. But another way to deal is, don't do that, but do this other activity which is more positive. Not that you just give negative, but you give something more. So this is one way to deal with the mind. If you say to the mind, no sex, right? No intoxication, no, all these different prohibitions like that, it can be difficult for the mind. Right? When the mind is restricted, then it can rebel. So Krishna said it can be the best of friends or the worst of enemies. So one way to deal with the mind is, you say to the mind, okay, we're not going to do this now. Right? We're going to do another more positive activity now. And then we may come back to this one later. Like that. And then you never come back to it. Right? But the mind tricks. The mind can accept that more easily. So you have to learn to deal with the mind sometimes. If you just put negative principles on the mind, it can be very difficult and the mind can rebel. As Krishna says, the mind can be the worst enemy. Or the mind can be the best friend. But it becomes the best friend when it wants to do something. Just like when your mind's into something, right? When your mind is attracted to something, it's your best friend. Yeah, when your mind really wants to do something, then it just carries you, right? And everything becomes easy, right? But if your mind is saying, I don't want to do it, right? Just like when the alarm goes off at 4 o'clock in the morning, right? Sometimes the mind is, your worst enemy, right? Oh my God, what is this cold? What is this cold shower? 4 o'clock in the morning, Tapasya cult that I joined, and the mind is like just freaking out, right? So this is the mind, he's the worst enemy. Or if he gets into something, then he becomes very enthusiastic. Just like on Janmashtami morning, you never see Mangalati like you do on Janmashtami, right? Janmashtami, you can't even see the deities, there's so many devotees in the temple, right? But no one's there, because everyone's mind is attached. It becomes the best friend, right? It's attached to the activity. No problem. No one wakes up on Janmashtami and thinks, oh, I'm so tired. I can't get up. It's like, oh, why does my alarm clock keep going off? No one thinks like that. Automatically you're up because the mind has become the best friend. But all the other days of the year, our mind can be just like an enemy. It's so difficult to overcome the modes of material nature. So we have to learn to train the mind to become a friend. In other words, it becomes attractive in a positive way to Krishna consciousness. And then it becomes very easy to practice.
Over the first line, fixing the vital air and the mind in one of the 6 circles of the vital air, does that mean that where you fix the mind, there the vital air goes?
Prabhupada explains in the purport, the yogis can move their...
inhalation.
Yeah, they can move the vital force up through the different chakras, the prana. or the air is through the different chakras?
When you say vital force, it's the inhaling air. Because air, prana is within the air. No?
Murali says no. Swami?
It's not the air.
So what is
so what is it?
Prana is the life energy.
Yeah, but still what is it? Yeah, but how do we focus it? Because I was, this is what I have understood from you.
It does mention the air in the prep book. It says the six circles of vital air circulation within the body. One has to fix his mind and the circulation of the vital air and thus think of the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. As far as I understand, there's movement of the air through the different chakras and so forth in the body.
That's what is my understanding.
What
this is.
Sorry. How about we don't get into it and we go to the next verse? Oh, that's it. Which verse are we up to?
7.
Okay. By these processes or any other true process, one must control the contaminated, unbridled mind, which is always attracted by material enjoyment, and thus fix himself in thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We read that already? Thank you very much. Do we read 12 yet? After controlling one's mind in sitting postures, one should spread a seat in a secluded and sanctified place, somewhere in the Himalayas. Sit there in an easy posture, keeping the body erect, and practice breath control. So this is the same as the 6th chapter of the Gita. Krishna goes through all these basic things. So for us, Prabhupada says on the japa tape, sit properly. So when you're chanting, we've said this before, one must sit properly, right? Back straight, erect, right? Concentrating on the holy name. As soon as you cross the legs in Padmasana, you know, when we sit normally, we sit with our legs crossed on the ground, like this, like cross. Then you notice you concentrate very nicely. Right? Sometimes when I'm tired, like at the farm chanting my japa and I'm tired, I sit on the couch and, like, you know, kind of, you know, put one leg like that and the other leg up and chant in japa. You know, not usually, not in the morning, but in, like, late at night sometimes I'm too tired. But I notice the mind, it's harder to concentrate. As soon as you're in this asana, right, sitting with the back straight and the legs crossed, right, much easier to concentrate like that. So therefore, Prabhupada says sit properly, right? If you want to concentrate on your japa, then sit properly. The yogi should clear the passage of vital air by breathing in the following manner. First, he should inhale very deeply. Everybody? And then hold the breath in until your teacher says to let it out. I don't know when I will do that. Somewhere I'll be let it out. And finally, exhale. Like that. Or, reversing the process, the yogi may first exhale and then hold the breath outside and finally inhale. This is done so that the mind may become steady and free from external disturbances. So this is a very elaborate system, right, of controlling the breath like that. And the yogis do this so that the mind becomes completely stable, right, fixed, stirra. Stirra means like controlled and fixed, and then they can begin to meditate upon Krishna. That's the point. But Prabhupada says in the final paragraph, he says, practicing the yoga system of exercise and breath control is very difficult for a person in this age, and therefore Lord Chaitanya recommends Kirtaniya Sada Hari. So we just take the basic principles. You know, we practice celibacy, we don't eat too much, right? We don't accumulate too much wealth. We just take the basic principles and we chant Hare Krishna. That's the point. In the age of Kali, there's no other way, there's no other way, there's no other way except to chant the holy names of Krishna. This is the Yuga Dharma. This Ashtanga Yoga is meant for another time. It's not meant for now. We just take the basic principles and we practice Sankirtan Yoga. This is the Yuga Dharma.
The yogis who practice such breathing exercises are very soon freed from all mental disturbances, just as gold, when put into fire and fanned with air, becomes freed from all impurities. Prabhupada says in the purport, Lord Chaitanya says, Param Vijayate, Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. By chanting the holy name, one will get Param Vijayate. Right? Jai means? Vijay means?
Great victory.
And Param Vijay means?
Greatest.
Yeah, the greatest. This is like the supreme benediction. Chanting the holy name, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. It is the supreme process for self-realization. There is nothing higher. Right? If anyone says there's something higher, no, there's nothing higher. Right? Kali Yuga, right? Kali Kali Nama Rupe Krishna Avatar, right? Says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's nothing else in Kali Yuga except the holy name of Krishna. Every other process is secondary, subordinate. This is the process for the whole. For we just take these basic principles and we chant. That's it. By practicing the process of pranayam, one can eradicate the contamination of his physiological condition. And by concentrating the mind, one can become free from all sinful activities. By restraining the senses, one can free himself from material association. And by meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes free from the three modes of material attachment. So Prabhupada mentions that in the purport, they follow the yoga, so the body will become very balanced. So that vata, pitta and kapha, the three doshas, become very balanced. When the doshas are balanced in the body, then it is easy to meditate upon or control the mind and meditate on Krishna. So therefore, Dhananjaya Prabhu, who is one of Prabhupada's early disciples, he's a Scottish devotee. Dhananjaya Prabhu, you may have heard of him, very nice story. He runs the MBT in Vrindavan. You must know Dhananjaya Prabhu. You must know him very well.
Yeah.
In LA. So Dhananjaya Prabhu, he said one time, he was talking about the instructions he'd received personally from Prabhupada. He said one time Prabhupada said, health first, then Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada gave him that instruction. He said, health first, then Krishna consciousness. Because if you're not healthy, you can't practice Krishna consciousness. That's how important Prabhupada took health. How did Prabhupada always finish his letters? You're ever well wisher. Now, what did Prabhupada write just before that?
Hope this
meets
you in good health.
Prabhupada would always write that. Hope this meets you in good health, your ever well wisher, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Right? Prabhupada would always say that. So that's why it's being said in this part of the Bhagavatam. The yogis do ashtanga to keep the body healthy so they can practice. So devotees, we must look after our health, because we want to meditate on Krishna. That's why we look after the health. Just like the farmer going for a run in the mornings, go for 20 minutes through the forest, go for a run, some exercise. Only doing it because it helps me to keep my health better so I can do my sadhana better. Yeah, and you can feel all the benefits of that. Mind is more clear, right? More vitality, more energy, like that. You know, less ailments. You don't get colds and things so easily because your body's more stronger and fitter.